Welcome to the Classy Ring Attire Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
And it's time to get classy.
Let's do it. So, like, you excited yet? No matter how dismal we might feel like it might be, you still get a little bit excited for Royal Rumble. Like, has that excitement hit you yet? Or is that...
Kind of?
Okay.
Okay, so...
Has it gotten you in the mood to watch, like, Royal Rumbles?
Old Rumbles? Kind of.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, a few things.
It's gotten me in the mood of having them on in the background. Let me put it that way.
A few things. We've not gotten a really great by the numbers promo this year.
Fair enough. Maybe they're waiting until next week.
Maybe, but I usually feel like it's running to the ground by now.
Yeah.
Like, and it's always an impressive one. And
it's always good to watch it the first time.
Right.
Then any time after that, it's like, okay, now we get it. Because it's always a long video package.
It's always
too.
Like a 4 or 5 minute video package.
Right.
Which is a bit much. And we definitely have this, I don't know, because they've had some stuff, and there's a very big Remember the Rumble, and it's the 30th anniversary.
I am getting tired of the Remember the Rumble tagline. Like, I get it. It's at the Alamo Dome.
Yeah, but like, 30th anniversary, I was like, all right, I am really looking forward to, you know, the promos for the Rumble, the build up to the Remember the Rumble promos. But now it's just like, hey, remember the Rumble? Yeah, remember the Rumble.
Right.
It's like, And I get that the Rumble, for the most part, sells itself, because it does. Because that's all you got to do is be like, Royal Rumble? I'm like, yeah, Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
But just because you don't have to doesn't mean you shouldn't.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And part of it is like, especially because these last two, like, I do a lot of watching wrestling with an eye or half a thought on the podcast already.
Sure.
Something happens, I was like, can we talk about that?
Yeah.
You know, a segment happens and it's like, nothing there. Nothing to talk about.
Right.
Other than be like, this segment happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so the past couple of weeks, at least watching wrestling for the podcast, has been very, very full. Because it's like, well, I know we have the classes. I know this class is going to be a whole episode.
Right.
And then Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, there's a match in Wrestle Kingdom that could be a whole episode.
Right.
But on top of that, a solid card all the way up and down for Wrestle Kingdom.
Right.
Several, several great matches. And because of that, there's a lot of like, where do we go from here? What does this mean for the future?
Mm-hmm.
Something very, very full, exciting. Undertaker's coming back. Shawn's back. It's just a promo movie, but like, cool that Shawn's back. We're starting to get people in. So it's felt very full, a lot of stuff to talk about and to be excited about for the past several weeks.
Right.
And it feels like, and it's going to the Rumble.
Yeah.
And this feels like this weird extra week.
Yeah.
This like, because it's not the go home show.
No.
But it feels like the
go home
show.
It felt like it should have been.
Exactly. It felt very go homey. And we don't get to fill this podcast up with predictions.
Sure, true. And I understand why they're waiting so late, because next week, next Sunday, is the Sunday that's in between, you know, the divisional conference champions. Yeah, the conference championships and the Super Bowl. Like, there's always that week off.
It's exactly where it should be
right
on the calendar, and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, it feels like we're in this weird stumbling block of momentum this week.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it's like we were going into it, and like, I kind of finished up my watching wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was like, all right, let's see. And no show really gave me a lot to talk about. Like, Raw was...
Yeah. Like, because I was thinking a lot today of like, exactly what do we have to talk about? And I'm just sitting there, like, I'm coming up with nothing really.
Yeah.
The only thing that's been on my mind lately is like me trying to figure out who I'm going to pick to win the Raw Rumble. And we don't talk about that until next week.
Exactly. So Raw happens, like, nothing there. But that's all right, because there's three more wrestling shows this week.
Right.
SmackDown happens, and you're like,
Yeah. And then the main event for NXT even was contract signing.
Well, it's like, are we having a takeover event?
Yeah.
Because I feel like we're getting like a fraction of the build-up to takeover that I'm used to here.
Right. Considering Bobby Roode and Nakamura didn't have a face-to-face until this week.
Yeah.
And a lot, I guess a lot of that had to do with, you know, the holidays. Because they did, like, taped... They did a really good idea for the holidays this year, I thought, for NXT. They did, like, house shows from Australia and the one from Japan.
Right.
And aired them as, like, two-hour specials.
Oh, that was
yeah, that was
a solid idea.
Right. Solid, great idea. Better than doing, like, a best-of show, because I think they've done something like that in the past.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, like, the last couple weeks of NXT, sure, I had a really good rematch for the tag team championships.
Uh-huh.
But those two teams aren't even fighting each other at TakeOver.
Yeah.
I think Revival, like, they just announced this week, Revival's fit going up against TM61, and the championship match is Authors of Pain versus DIY. Like, they did a lot of match announcing this past week. They did a little bit to build, I guess, a little bit of a feud for the Fatal 4-Way for the Women's Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Which, honestly, now that I think about it, it's probably the only way they're going to be able to realistically get the belt off of Asuka.
And I get that.
Right.
You know, that's like, all right.
Sure. And honestly, like, I'm kind of digging the run that Peyton... Is it Peyton Royce?
Yeah, Peyton. Isn't it?
The main one out of the two.
Yeah.
The one that gets the most mic time.
Yeah.
Yes, Peyton Royce. I'm actually kind of digging the role she's been on, you know? She's really kind of going into the cowardly heel. That, you know, relies on numbers games and everything.
I can see the seeds of, okay, the next lineup of great NXT women's division.
And honestly, it'll go through the two Australian women, I feel like, especially Peyton Royce.
Well, and it's like, not today, not this month, probably not for the next six mm-hmm. months, minimum.
Right.
But, like, I can see, like, okay. Yeah. I see a long-term game here where, right. like... That's what NXT is supposed to be, learning right. ground. You know, at some point, we have to be like, all right, NXT is always going to be this magic peek behind the curtain
yeah.
where we get to see the training and the learning right. and the trial and error.
The only reason I'm not including Ember Moon in that is I don't think Ember Moon's going to be on NXT for much longer. I really don't think so.
Really?
Character-wise...
You know who could use some more time on NXT?
No, I know. I have a feeling they're going to go full, like... Well, I wasn't going to say Baron Corbin, but Baron Corbin actually was in this for a while. Apollo Crews.
Yeah.
I feel like they're, because she's so good in the ring, I feel like they're not going to be able to resist moving her up.
Yeah.
And she might be able to hold her own, you know, but from a character standpoint, she probably needs some more time. But I have this feeling that, I just have this feeling she's not going to be in NXT for much longer.
Yeah, if this was like the reign of the Bellas era.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I might be starved enough that I'm like, I don't care, bring her up.
Right.
But
I've got a feeling.
Like, there is so much talent. There's so much talent, and it's being utilized and front and center mm-hmm. on the main shows.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I don't need it. And
I don't know, like, I don't, maybe, maybe they're using all the other females in NXT currently as a barometer, because she's probably further along than Liv Morgan or something, but it's like, yeah, but she still needs more time.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to see her in matches with people on the main roster.
Yeah.
I don't want to see her in a feud with anybody on the main roster.
Fair enough.
There's nobody who I'm like, I can't wait for the
right
person,
because
Moon feud.
She hasn't had a feud in NXT. She really hasn't. She's had one-off matches.
Yeah.
You know, she's alluding to that she will face whoever wins at TakeOver, which makes me believe that, you know, they're wanting to keep her face, so Peyton Royce would be a perfect opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe do a rematch during the tapings, you know, and then shenanigans go down, Asuka loses by, you know, shenanigans, and Asuka moves on.
Yeah.
Even though, like, in the ring, you're not going to get much better than Asuka.
No, you're not. And Asuka. I've been thinking about this week. Asuka and Nakamura, I have this excitement for main roster slash fear for main roster. Right. I think, and everybody does it, and it's going to be language barrier, cultural barrier, where you're like, I love these guys. I know what they're capable of. And until they actually debut on the main roster, I'm always going to be nervous about it.
Yeah. And what feeds that fear is, for instance, rewatching old Royal Rumbles. I believe it was Royal Rumble 2003 I was watching. Tajiri came on, and Jerry Lawler kept making the joke that he was confusing him with Funaki.
Nice.
And then, like, somebody posted a thing on Reddit that was like, that one time Funaki almost became WWE champion, and it was like a weird, like, 8-minute match, and this was when he was Kung Funaki, like, full on. He was wearing a full gi and everything, and just like, oh man, stuff like that is why we're scared that WWE is going to mess up Nakamura and Asuka. Like, and again, this is a different time.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not 100% concerned we're going to get like a Hong Kong Fooey caricature for Nakamura. Like, I don't think that's something I need to stay awake at night worrying about.
But you never know.
But well, the real fear is they really like it when their champion stands in the ring for 25 minutes and calls people out.
True.
Like,
and that's not something
they Nakamura's, love those 20-minute promos.
Right, and that's not something Nakamura's going to do.
No.
Although this week, Bobby Roode was bringing the thunder as far as his promo. And then Nakamura's like, yeah, you look like a Shiba.
Like,
and it was funny. And it's just like, oh, Nakamura, he can't take anything too heavy. And that's his character.
That is
he doesn't his character. He doesn't take anything too heavily unless it's Samoa Joe and they're like on match 3 or 4. You know what I mean?
Nakamura.
He can turn it on when he needs to, but it's usually through actions and words. It's whatever. And it works for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think Nakamura is doing brilliant work. Mm-hmm. And part of what's so impressive is going back and looking individually, he's not had many stellar matches in NXT.
Right.
He's had constant good matches. No bad matches. Constant good matches. And then a handful, 2 or 3 amazing matches. Like one with Samoa Joe.
And his then Sami Zayn
debut are the two that like immediately come to mind.
Yeah.
And like that is a solid, brilliant rewatch it many a time on the network match. But for it being like, oh, Nakamura, 2 matches in close to a year.
But then it's one of those things where it's like, those matches are good enough to where you're willing to overlook everything else almost.
If you look it back, you're like, I'm always still excited for Nakamura to come
absolutely.
Out. And I don't know if he can or will do that once he's on the main roster. Because some of that has to be, you know, personal awareness of like when you pull out all the stops and when you don't pull all the stops. There's a reason, like, you know, complain all you want about 5 moves of doom. Part of the reason is Cena goes for it when the matches matter and only when the matches matter.
Right.
Like, he doesn't put in 100. And that's how you go for 15 years is you don't put in 100% on 8 matches every week.
Yeah.
But all that leads up to, I don't know what will happen to Nakamura or Asuka when they hit
go to the main roster,
that main roster. And that's, and now that all of a sudden New Japan looks like this up and coming new division, the biggest rival they've had since WCW.
Right.
And that's, let's say that's 100% an impressionistic feel.
Right.
The numbers don't come close
right.
to arguing that. But we have gotten to the point all of a sudden on one thing where WWE suddenly has this New Japan thing right in front of them in their face. And I'm worried that that's going to cause a trigger pull on Nakamura or Asuka or both mm-hmm. before it should happen, before the best opportunity to happen.
Right. And not
just
have,
to be like, no,
right.
we have this.
Right. And it's not saying they're not ready. Like, exactly. they both have been ready since the day
they're
they
both,
walked
they're
in.
They're both ready.
But we just, it's one of those things where we don't want them to be moved up for the heck of it and not have anything for them to do.
Nakamura has one chance to make a debut on the main roster.
Right.
Everything after that is a re-debut or a try again of some level.
And honestly, like, I wouldn't mind if they did something like NXT where you don't actually see him on the main roster until a big event like WrestleMania. You know what I mean? Like, they announce it ahead of time, like, mm-hmm. he will face so-and-so, and then you might have, like, a video package or something, but you don't actually see him on the show until that day. You know, kind of build up yeah. kind of that...
How
the excitement on just the name itself. Yeah.
How I would do it, probably. First of all, to me, I don't know how you don't immediately put him up against AJ Styles.
Yeah. Considering that's, you've got, like, you know what they can do.
Exactly.
You saw a prime example of it at Wrestle Kingdom 10.
They could make a carbon copy of the Wrestle Kingdom 10 match.
Yeah.
And like, all right, let's go.
Yeah. Even the bullet spot, you know, like, it wouldn't make any sense right now, but who cares?
I would put that like the pay-per-view after WrestleMania, mm-hmm. or maybe two after WrestleMania, like somewhere in that like
yeah.
divot pocket, just because
when you really want some ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Kind of like how they tried to turn Money in the Bank into WrestleMania last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Just because I feel like after the initial panic that I would have as WWE of New Japan's big, we have to fight New Japan all of a sudden. Then you like take a step back. You're like, they didn't sell out the Tokyo Dome with their biggest event of the year.
Right.
Like, they're talking a big game. They're putting on good shows.
Yeah.
But if we're talking numbers, we're talking ratings, we're talking money being yeah. funneled to the company, eh, we're okay.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, there's always a giant wave of momentum by yeah. New Japan around this time every year. And I will admit, this is the biggest wave that they've got.
This is the biggest wave by far they've got. This
right.
isn't like a little bit more than last year. This is double or more what last year
right.
was.
Right. And they'll pick up some more momentum, you know, when they start their tournaments. Like the G1 Summit.
Yeah.
You know, the tag team, the juniors, all that. But you don't really have a whole lot of people, like, maintaining that momentum.
Well,
I'm not saying that's New Japan's fault. That might just be the internet's fault, just, like, only caring about them one time a year.
I think what it is, for me, as an American wrestling fan,
mm-hmm.
being interested in this company all mm-hmm. of a sudden. Not all of a sudden, but, you know. You
now,
know
granted,
I mean.
To New Japan's, to their credit, like, they kind of had to do a little bit of rebuilding last year because
yeah.
they kind of got gutted with a lot of their big guys,
exactly.
their big
yeah.
stars, like, right after their big show.
To me, the difficulty comes not from the language barrier, but from the, I guess, structure barrier, because it's a little confused. They have a New Japan Network, basically.
Yeah.
But it's a little difficult to follow the storyline, to follow what counts and what doesn't, mm-hmm. to follow when stuff's making progression. There's not a weekly, you know, Raw, this counts.
Right.
This is... And
you basically get like kind of a best of this week show
right,
with Axis.
There's a lot on there. It's very hard to follow what order. And now, if you went into WWE
mm-hmm.
not knowing anything, I'm sure it would be impossible to follow. Why are these pay-per-views in alphabetical order? I don't want to watch,
right,
you know, 7 Money in the Banks. I want to watch
that
this
does,
chronological
that does
order.
Really, that really, really gets my nerves when I'm watching on
yeah.
my PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
Watching it on your computer, it's fine. It does it by date automatically. But for some reason, when you do it, doing it on, you know, my PS4, they do it by alphabetical order. It's like,
yep.
No, like, I don't care.
Yep, I don't want to care
about Armageddon.
7 Backlashes.
Ugh.
And so there's... Because sometimes, I was like, yeah, let me watch this feud. Let me watch this 3-month period.
Yeah.
So I'll watch these 3 pay-per-views.
Because,
you know. And I have to look it up on Wikipedia. And
yeah.
Like, that's... And so I'm experiencing that now with
New Japan.
Yeah.
And New Japan, there's not an easy way to get their network onto my TV.
Right.
It's not on PlayStation or Xbox right. or my Fire Stick or
anything. I mean, they just recently made like an English accessible site, yeah, like yeah. I think like a month ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, beforehand I was having to Google Translate some stuff. And so progress is being made, and that's kind of the final, you know, barrier to me being like, all right, let's go ahead and get that New Japan network.
Right.
And really delve into it is because it's like, and part of it is WWE does have this like, here's wrestling forever, more than you can possibly watch.
Right.
And as long as they keep doing that, it keeps being like, all right, I'll get to New Japan. But we're getting close. Like, I do think they're making improvements, and I think once they have a good, like, starter course, and honestly, I think that's going to be coming around Wrestle Kingdom 12.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a really good...
increased accessibility.
Yeah, and I think there'll be probably some sort of like, here's a nice package of all the matches building up to the feuds that you can see.
Right, yeah.
And so... And they're branching out. They're going to, I think, New Zealand?
I believe so, yeah.
And maybe America?
Yeah, one leg of the G1 Summit. One leg of it's going to be in LA.
So, like...
That's pretty exciting. And again, like, because I think we talked about a couple weeks ago, all their major pay-per-views will have English commentary this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredible.
Exactly. I will say that as of right now, if you were, you know, if I had to pick and choose, one day go to WrestleMania, one day go to Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
I think it's Wrestle Kingdom.
Right.
And part of that is still like, it's in the Tokyo Dome.
Right.
WrestleMania, because it's a traveling show, always has a little bit of like, which one am I going to go to?
Yeah.
Because if WrestleMania was in Madison Square Garden, I'm like, yeah, I got to go to the one in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have, and I understand why it doesn't have that. I'm not saying that it should. They are.
No.
Like, number-wise, they're saying like, no thank you for money.
Yeah.
To go to Madison Square Garden for WrestleMania. And I understand that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we want bigger, well, A, we want bigger stadiums, and B, they've got that, like a weird licensing thing going on, which is why we haven't had a show in Madison Square Garden, a televised show, I should say.
Yeah.
Except for the one weird, like, network special last year. I think it was, last year. I still don't know what the weird loophole was on that one. I'm sure it was
some weird, like, internet streaming's different than TV loophole.
And I'm assuming they're still not exclusively on the network for pay-per-views.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
There you go. We have, and the thing with, you know, the other thing to think about is like, oh, the crowd in this city versus the crowd in that city.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to WrestleMania, it's all the same crowd. It's the WrestleMania crowd.
Oh, sure. And it's going to... So from that aspect, it doesn't really matter where it is.
No.
But again, you know, it is good for the city. It's good to see, like, what they do differently because of whatever city they're in.
Oh, it is. There's definitely pluses and minuses to both
things. Still more likely to go to WrestleMania, but that's only because you're more willing to get on a plane than I am. If WrestleMania is on the East Coast... I'm thinking hard about going to it.
Like, watching Wrestle Kingdom 11, it's just like,
Oh, yeah, it would be an amazing, amazing place to be live, you know?
Like, if... We talked about going to Japan in the past, and I was like, it's starting to be like, well, when are we going to Japan?
Right.
Like, it's a consideration now.
Right.
For any sort of like
we should go early. What would be better than Japan at New Year's?
Yeah.
And just stay a couple extra days because it's always on the 4th, I believe. January 4th,
somewhere
I believe.
Somewhere around there.
And you might as well just go to the Tokyo Dome.
Like, you know, see what's happening.
Uh-huh. But because you talk about progress. Speaking of progress, a lot of rumors came out today and yesterday that ICW and Progress might be coming to the WWE Network.
Yeah.
And it's something that I kind of find interesting. Like, it would be, you know, other than the actual production side of it, like, as far as, you know, cameras and everything, that would be a weekly show on the network that WWE doesn't really have to produce a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know, let other people book it, let them run it how they want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it treat it like an actual network. You know, like, we like this idea for a wrestling show for this wrestling network. And, you know, you'll run the show.
Yeah.
You know, and based on ratings and blah, 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 this will determine how long it actually lasts on there. I feel like that would be amazing.
Well, and I think that harkening back to when the WWE Network was first announced, it was going to be a TV network.
Right.
That, you know, and what they have now is a million times better.
Sure.
And just flat out, no questions.
Yeah.
This is a better way to do it. But thinking back to, like, when it was a TV network,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of, like, okay, a WWE network or a wrestling network. Like, right. Obviously, there are some, like, TNA that you won't want to do business with.
Yeah.
But how...
But these smaller independent places, yeah.
Right. Or, and even if you want to do, like, a weird, like, indie group of the week.
Sure. And, I mean, you know, ultimately... What's really all that worse, Pop TV or the WWE Network? Like, one's a paid subscription, you know, service, but you're still probably going to get exposed to a bigger audience.
The thing is, how much, I don't even know, but in this area, I wonder how much I would have to pay to get up to Pop, for Pop to finally
right,
be
for
on,
whatever
my, kinda, on I, my cable subscription.
I haven't had cable in years, so I have no idea. But it would probably be quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, but then again, I don't know, because it used to be the TV Guide channel and that came with everything.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's something to constantly be like, I don't know. That will forever be the stumbling block until TNA gets back on a quote unquote right. real network. And it's thoughts like that.
I mean, it's not even TNA anymore.
It's always TNA.
I know.
Well, remember when they made it Impact Wrestling, they said, Hogan said back then,
yeah.
This is no longer TNA. This is now just Impact Wrestling. And we all went, it's TNA Impact Wrestling.
And now, Anthem, I think is the company at the bottom.
Yeah. So it's not.
Now they're like basically just having just Impact on all the branding.
Mm-hmm.
Impact and their owl. They really love their owl.
It's the same thing. It's not a new announcement. It's the same announcement.
I'm sure. Yeah,
and
yeah.
They were just trying to enforce it again. But it's thoughts like that that every time you feel like WWE just needs to cut all ties with Universal, NBC, go full network. But then it's like, no. I see why this stuff needs to stay on USA.
Because it becomes a 3-hour network commercial. For two-ish million eyes.
Yeah.
You know? So and again, if, as long as USA and Universal's willing to, like, shell out the money for them,
mm-hmm.
yeah, sure, we'll promote KFC.
Yeah.
We don't care, but we're also going to promote our network.
Yeah.
Also, and I do want to talk about, since this is kind of a grab bag of wrestling stuff to talk about this week, because there's not anything currently going on that's worth talking about. Did you watch how much of the, because I it did happen this week, so I guess this is current. How much of the UK
I've not tournament? Seen the second half of it.
Okay, so you have watched some of it though. Mm-hmm. How good was the commentary? Like, it blew me away that Michael Cole, oh yeah, he kind of picked up on how to call a wrestling match. And then, you know, of course, Nigel McGuinness, I think they worked incredible together. Yeah. And a lot of people are talking about how good the commentary was. Like, the in-ring, you know, competition was amazing. I don't think anyone is shocked by that. I think everyone's more shocked that, you know, Michael Cole is actually good in the ring when he doesn't have to promote KFC every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's like, I think that's...
I'm not picking on KFC. I love their food, but it's just the only thing coming to mind right now.
I have always... Not always. I have... Like WrestleMania 28 and on,
yeah,
been willing to defend Michael Cole
right.
as good at his job because his job is an impossible job.
Right. He is just the mouthpiece, mm-hmm. you know. And I'm sure he would like to call matches instead of promote other things at the same time as matches going on.
Yeah.
And we saw that with the UK tournament.
We harp a lot on, you know, they're talking about the next week's pay-per-view in the middle of this feud, or they're talking about Mountain Dew in the middle of this match. But the problem stems even deeper in, here's a mid-card match, and they're talking about earlier tonight, John Cena or Roman Reigns said this.
Yeah.
And it's not just burying matches with the things you have to promote. It's burying feuds with other feuds.
Yeah.
And it guts the entirety of your mid-card.
Yeah.
Which, in turn, crumbles your entire card.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he didn't have to do that, there was no, by the way, we need to talk about Roman Reigns, we need to talk about the Royal Rumble or anything on this.
Yeah.
And that's what made it so good, was the match was the focus of the commentary the whole time.
Right.
For every match.
And it's one of those things that that gets kind of overlooked quite a bit. Like, all these things that we watch of WWE where we love that Michael Cole isn't on the commentary and we end up loving the commentary. Anything with like Mauro or 205 or you know, Moments in Time and SmackDown or whatever. NXT is probably a better example.
No.
9 times out of 10, Michael Cole is behind the scenes producing the commentary guys. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one on the headsets. You know, because we've got, I remember like photos from like one of the NXT specials where he was like during commercials, he's like at the table next to him, like, you know, kind of coaching him through.
Yeah.
So clearly he cares a lot about, you know, commentating and how it enhances what we're watching.
It absolutely
is. It's just he's dealt an impossible hand being on the flagship show.
Mm-hmm. And I think whoever is in his ear, Vince, but I think, quote unquote, whoever is in his ear is wrong.
Right. No, absolutely.
And the thing is, it's Vince, and Vince has been on commentary.
Yeah.
And Vince was not bad at commentary.
Mm.
Vince was on commentary, what?
For a really long time.
Yeah, for a very long time. And he didn't interrupt, you know, a Junkyard Dog match to talk about what Roddy Piper was saying about Hogan backstage.
Right.
And it's just, it's, I don't know how that happened.
Yeah.
To the commentator, the thing happening in the ring should be the most important thing in the world from that bell to bell.
Yeah.
And it's not on Raw.
No.
It is sometimes.
Right.
And the thing is, it is a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we harp on it a lot, and it's usually, honestly, just like a quick da-da-da-da-da-da happened.
Yeah.
And then back to the match. They have in the past flat ignored matches.
Yeah.
But in this day and age, Michael Cole does not ignore matches.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like he does his best saying the things that he's being told to be said. But those things existing at all, the moment he says that, it is a signal to the audience that this isn't important. This is, nothing important is going to happen in this match. You don't need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there was going to be a surprise heel turn or an interference or anything that I need to be watching this show to pay attention to, you wouldn't be talking about something else.
Right.
It is a signal to me. Your show's 3 hours. I'm not going to sit and stare at the TV for 3 hours. It'll be on, but I'm doing laundry or I'm checking email or I'm doing something. And the second you talk about something that's not happening in the ring, nothing important's happening in the ring.
Right.
It's a very clear signal. Even subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not saying everybody is, you know, watching for this, but it's going to be a subconscious trigger that you're like, this match isn't important. You're not talking about the match. It's not important. Commentary is insanely vital to telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people have their favorite commentators.
Yeah.
That's why JR and Jerry Lawler as a duo is forever going down as what it is.
Yeah.
That's why Bobby Heenan is forever going down.
Yeah.
For what he is.
He and Gorilla, yeah. And while we're on the subject, what in the bluest of hells is the purpose for a four-man commentary booth on freaking SmackDown? It's like, hey, this show is gaining a lot of momentum, and it's consistently turning out decent shows just about every week. How can we shoot them in the foot? Because it's like they've got Morrow and JBL to react to whatever's going on in the ring, to call the matches. They brought in Tom Phillips now to basically to do their ad reads.
Yeah.
And David Otunga to just talk about how much he loves John Cena, I guess. I don't know. My mind blanks whenever Otunga's talking.
And this is not...
I forget Tom Phillips is there every once in a while.
This is not a thing I will say a lot. But I blame CM Punk. And I will tell you why.
I was about to say, explain yourself.
CM Punk in 2011 was injured, and so they put him on commentary.
Part of a three-man booth.
It was a three-man booth.
Okay.
Because it was Lawler.
Lawler, Cole, and then Punk. Yeah.
And Punk. And that was when when Cole was really getting kind of into the heel, Cole, Pro-Miz thing.
Yes.
Punk worked fantastically there.
Yes.
Better than anybody expected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fan of Punk, through and through, just happy to see him on TV.
Yes.
Because he was injured. Did not expect it to go as well as it did.
Right.
It's part of the pipe bomb where he's like, I'm better at commentary. And he was.
Yeah.
And I don't know whose idea it was to put Punk on commentary.
Right.
I don't know if that was him saying, just put me out there, let me... make my presence known.
From what I understand, it was not his decision. It was just like, well, we need you on commentary, you know.
So I don't know whose idea it was, and he's not the first wrestler to have been on commentary.
No.
Randy
Savage's later years with the WWE was almost exclusively on commentary.
Yeah,
there was a couple times with Roddy Piper.
And we've always had like, oh, the rivals in the feud's coming down to comedy.
And if we're talking, you know, former wrestlers, you know, you have Gorilla and Bobby Heenan. So but there you go.
Okay, those guys are retired wrestlers who become commentators.
Right.
Someone
was
like,
probably the first time where he was an active wrestler.
Yes.
Not counting Jerry Lawler, because that was kind of occasional.
Yeah. But
he got kicked in the chest. Sorry, go on.
But Punk worked better than anybody had.
Yeah.
Any belief that it could happen.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think there has been a chasing of that magic of trying to get that lightning to strike twice ever since. Anytime.
So their solution was David Otunga?
Okay.
No, I'm trying to see.
Because anytime a wrestler isn't quite working in the ring and all this isn't going to be a thing, they put them on commentary. There have been so many wrestlers jumping to commentary in the past handful of years with Tunga, with Otunga. I don't know why I cut off that first syllable. With
you made him Polynesian all of a sudden.
With Austin Aries, Graves.
Corey Graves had to retire. Austin was injured. Yeah, they did it with. One of the Usos.
Yeah, Alex Riley for a while until he decided he wanted to get back in the ring, but it felt like he was being groomed to be commentator now.
And I thought he was doing incredibly well in commentary too.
He wasn't doing bad. But that has become this immediate not working in the ring, put him on commentary, and that overload your commentary and has become a trickle up system.
Right.
Todd Phillips should be on 205 or should be on
NXT. He was doing great on SmackDown before they took him off because of Morrow, which I understand because Morrow, you know, is fantastic and he was a big get for them.
Well, if you look at it now, that should be a two person. That should be JBL and Morrow.
Yeah.
Over there on SmackDown. And Todd Phillips should be on 205 or NXT.
Well, he still is.
But that's where he should be. That should be his show that he is sculpting and making his own, and this is his brand of commentary that he can focus on. But these shows have gotten so crowded. These commentary booths have gotten so crowded.
Yeah.
It's become this catch-all solution to have people constantly on our minds.
Right.
I don't see where the logical thought process of Otunga should be on commentary because he's good at commentary coming from, other than we need Otunga for something.
Right.
Whether you genuinely just want him on your law team because he's an amazing... I don't know if he's an amazing lawyer, but let's assume he's an amazing lawyer and he's like, I want to wrestle. And they're like, well, fine.
I think before this, all he was doing was he was on the Raw pre-show that they aired live from, I believe, from HQ.
Yeah.
And I guess they liked what he was doing then. I didn't really see anything that blew me away.
But there are so many commentators that aren't up and coming commentators.
Right.
They're there for they got there another way.
Right.
That I think it is, and SmackDown is the worst example, is the most shining, glaring issue.
Of the bottleneck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of it's all got crammed there.
Yeah. And they got tired of Tom Phillips trying to make himself look shorter in their one-on-one interviews. But again, like, he could just be on, and I don't know, like, I just want them to get rid of David Otunga.
Yeah.
He's awful.
He is the most useless and redundant aspect of that.
Right. And used to, we all would only say that about his in-ring career. Bam. Zing. But, you know, you need Tom Phillips because if you want him to be your straight down the middle guy who will do the ad reads and whatnot as part of your three-man booth, that's fine. But it would be way better if there wasn't four freaking people. Yeah.
Three-man booths are crowded.
Yes. And it's weird because that's the one... I know they're kind of just grooming them, even though they don't need any more commentators.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of throwing off NXT some because they've got Percy Watson, and he's not great.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's developmental. Well, I understand that on all aspects.
If anywhere should have a three-man, it's NXT. Because you got to groom people to work back and forth. You might be like, all right, you're the middle guy, so I need you working heel this match and face the next two matches. So practice and try stuff out and back and forth.
And honestly, now they've got options, really, because Corey Graves is, as much as I hate his fashion sense and how much of a just giant douche he looks like, he's doing a great job on Raw.
Yeah.
And there's really no reason to have him on NXT.
Mm-hmm.
So now I feel like you can replace him with Nigel McGuinness.
Yeah.
And again, like, I don't know what their new UK show is going to be, but they need Nigel McGuinness on commentary somewhere because he did that good of a job on the UK tournament.
Well, and part of it is the so many people being on multiple shows, Corey Graves, Todd Phillips, and I, you know, I'm trying to, like, mentally map out stuff because we also have had, like, the Cruiserweight Classic and the UK thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, are there more random commentary team combos out there?
Yeah.
And I get some of that is a little bit of familiar faces. Like, with the UK team, it made sense that Michael Cole was there.
Sure.
If you're straight down the line WWE only, you know, let me check this out. It's nice to have a familiar face to latch onto, or a familiar voice, I guess.
Yeah.
But there are so many people who are like, you don't need to be pulling double duty like this.
Right.
That's why we have four people on SmackDown.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so I feel like that would be a good step in the right direction. Again, maybe Percy Watson might turn the corner, you know, in time, but because, you know, you got to remind yourself, it's developmental on all levels, so, you know, he's... And
part of it is, with NXT, we talk about it's developmental. That's the constant excuse for it. It's just developmental. They're working.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, you know, that's nobody's first match. That's still like
right.
That's the end of their training. That's
like
the final.
Even at the performance center, like you've got people who've been in that system for years and never once has stepped foot on camera in the ring. You know what I mean?
And like, and they've had people, you know, working house shows. So working on all of that character development, ring entrance stuff, in addition to just like learning how to safely bump and run the ropes. Like all of that stuff has been worked on ahead of time.
Yeah.
I don't know how much the commentators have had practice.
Yeah. I mean, I know they have like rooms and stations at the performance center. And from what I understand, that's what they did for a little while with Corey Graves before he started on NXT with the commentary. So I don't know how long they've had Percy Watson, you know, doing it, but clearly they saw him some sort of like click in his head and do something that they liked.
I would assume, and this is obviously I've done neither one, so I'm speculating here, but I would assume practice commentating to real commentating is a bigger jump than
doing it
basic
live.
Than the wrestling practice to real.
Sure.
Because like even with wrestling, you get dark matches, which is everything but the cameras have hit record.
Yeah.
Like you've had these matches that for all intents and purposes were, you know, full on NXT matches.
Right.
So just because you're later on the card once the cameras have started, I am assuming that, you know, unless you were have weird camera specific stage fright,
yeah,
it's not that much of a emotional or mental jump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas with commentary, I don't know if that's the case.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. And again, commentary is not for everybody. Like we love Renee Young, but you know, she was not great on commentary.
No.
Just after every big move saying, "Whoa," it's just not good commentary. I don't know. And I
don't think Renee Young ever got a fair shake at it. She didn't do anything that made me want to give her a fair shake at it.
Yeah, I mean,
and when you were cup runneth overing with commentators,
right?
And when you
and at that point in time when they had her try it, they had a lot of commentators then. It was kind of like a weird rotating booth.
Yeah.
So yeah,
and when you have stuff for her to do now, that seems to be working a lot better.
Yes, absolutely.
She
is absolutely perfect in her current role.
Then yeah, everything worked out for the best. Everybody should be happy with where we are today.
Yeah.
But I do want to. I'm willing to go up and say she didn't get a fair shake.
Sure.
But she should not get a fair shake. Not everybody should get a fair shake. Maybe.
Wow. Okay. All right. Joel telling us how he really feels. What's making you happy?
You go first.
I don't have anything. I just thought of the segment. So
nothing's
I
making decided, you happy?
I don't have anything off. Well, okay. Here's okay. Okay. The UK tournament was really good.
The UK tournament was really good.
Well, you don't know. You only watched half of
the UK tournament was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there. Well, I'll go with that. Happy?
Yeah, that's all right. 5 out of 10.
Fair enough.
So, there's a lot of really big hubba and hoopla about Netflix's hubbub.
You did not pronounce that last big.
You know what? I have decided that only some syllables need to be pronounced in words this week.
There's a lot of hubba going on right now.
Tunga says there's a lot of hubba.
Tunga is all about the hubba. Tunga hubba. I feel like we just made a mascot.
So everybody's very excited about Series of Unfortunate Events coming out on Netflix.
My roommate's been binge watching it all
big
week.
Deal, hooray.
Yeah.
More importantly, on Netflix, the Netflix front, Voltron season 2 is out. Voltron, you know, the 5 giant robot lions that turn into the giant man?
Yep.
So
Power Rangers?
No, Voltron. Entirely different.
So Transformers.
I feel like I've told you this, and I need to re-implore it. Forget all preconceived notions of Voltron from the 80s, because it was...
Okay, done. I don't have any.
Yeah, no. Because you don't care for it because you think it's dumb. That is a preconceived notion.
Okay.
Ignore that. Watch the Voltron on Netflix. It is some of the best television that Netflix has put out. I would say
that's a tall order.
I know it is, and I would say its season one is standing shoulder to shoulder with Daredevil season one and House of Cards season one.
Oh man. Now you're daring me not to like it just on that premise alone, because that is heresy.
It is, I think, the best animated show currently airing.
I'm trying to think if it really has all that much competition.
Okay. That's obviously aiming at children's animation acceptable, you know, not adult-centric animation. But I might be willing to put it up against, because Archer's not as strong as it once was. It's good, you should watch it, but it's not as strong as it once was.
Right.
I haven't seen Rick and Morty, so I can't, you know, I can't make a fair comparison there. So maybe Rick and Morty. But I don't think of an animated show that's better than Voltron right now.
You're missing out on Metalocalypse, man, even though it's technically done now.
Yeah.
Finally canceled that.
Airing right now.
Fine. All right.
Voltron is some of the best, and I haven't seen season two.
Okay.
But Voltron...
just going off of just season one.
Okay. For those who this will matter to, it's from the same creators as Avatar The Last Airbender. And so...
so it was made by M. Night Shyamalan. See, I know that that's not true.
I know, and I'm trying to decide.
But I'm saying it just so I can get a reaction out of Joel.
I'm trying to decide how to respond. And I will let you know that M. Night Shyamalan currently has a movie out right now that does has he? An 89% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
M. Night Shyamalan is apparently one of the best auteurs working today. So your commentary falls flat.
Okay.
Yeah, Split has like amazing reviews right now.
Split?
Yeah.
I haven't even heard of it.
Well, look at you being
No, I'm not trying to be snooty about it.
Hole in the ground. Head in the ground. That's what you
But doing. Like I haven't even seen like any commercial or anything about it, so I have literally no idea about it.
It's got Mr. Tumnus. What's his name?
Yeah.
He has a bunch of Split personality.
Interesting.
So
cool. So this has been Classic Ring Attire.
There you go.
Next week, I promise you, everybody will be much more interesting because we've got predictions.
Here's the thing. I have all my predictions. I'm having to, like, hold them in.
Yes. That's been the hardest part of... I want to talk about who I'm going to pick for Rotten Tomatoes because I haven't made up my mind yet, and I'm having a really hard time convincing myself to pick one or the other. Like, because I know you went, you talked about it a few weeks ago on why it has to be Taker.
Yes.
And... I agree that you've made really good points.
I did.
And I'm not disagreeing with you. But for some reason, I don't want to pick Undertaker, and I don't know why.
You know what? I didn't want to pick Triple H last year. And look where that left us.
True. Didn't we both pick Triple H?
No, I picked Brock last year.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Before I knew that the Rumble was going to be worth 5 points.
Is that still 5 points this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Gross. Because I want to pick Samoa Joe, but like... because I feel like it's like it's not a complete
certainty. You're just giving up on holding that until next week.
It's not a complete certainty.
At the 53 minute mark, you're like, no, we will do
but
this.
I don't want to hedge that bet on like a 5 point match, even though I'm not really in contention because like this hasn't been a great
you've been
year
sucking for
me
for the whole year.
I've been
I have to. This has not been my year.
Not been a good year. And then
on top of all my other 2016 issues, I did really bad on several picks.
I mean, that is the issue. Am I right?
that's the cherry.
So, but this is like the make it or break it match. Mm-hmm. You know, because it all ends in a few months at WrestleMania.
I lost 4 DVDs on this match last year.
Right,
like because I thought it was worth 1 point.
Right. And that is stupid. You hear that, Blair?
Here's the thing.
It's stupid.
I will say this.
I
don't mind it this year because I know in advance.
Sure. Okay, fine.
Had I known it was going to be 5 points last year.
I don't know.
Had I known it was going to be 5 points last year, I would have gone to take your Triple H was the safe bet.
Yeah.
But I looked at it and like it hurt my heart to say Triple H because that was going to the main event. We all knew it was going to.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can afford this loss. I can afford this loss. I can vote with my heart. I can go Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
And then, like, it happened. I was like, that's okay. I got my point.
Right.
Loss, but I got a safe
And again,
2-point margin.
I'm not disagreeing that the Royal Rumble, it's, you know, should, it's, the odds are against you. It should be worth more than a regular one-on-one match. But 5 points? It still seems steep to me. I'm just saying. Because, like, championships matches are like, what? They do, what, 3 points, I think?
I think so.
I mean,
I think it's 3 for the big ones, 2 for the small ones, isn't it?
For the mid-cards, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I can see maybe, I could see this on par with that. You know, like, 3 points. 5 seems ridiculous.
I'm okay with 5 because I know it's coming. I know to hedge my bets accordingly.
Maybe because this was all made by Blair. I don't know exactly how much input Q had on, like, point values. I don't know if Blair did the metric conversion right. Like, maybe it's 5 point, like, the five points metric
are, is 3 point in the imperial system.
Yeah, like, I feel like he's measuring his points in meters.
We'll have to ask him.
I mean, we were not meant to have the metric system in this world. If God wanted us to have the metric system, Jesus would have had 10 disciples. That's all I'm saying.
12 isn't the basis for the imperial system.
I don't care.
There is no basis for the imperial system. That's the issue with the imperial system.
Except for the imperial part, where we assert our dominance over everyone. We're right.
So you're telling me that Jesus actually had 32 disciples?
Sure, why not?
Or 212 disciples?
He's our Lord and Savior. He can do whatever he wants.
Like, have 10 disciples?
Yeah, but he didn't. Because he knew the metric system.
He didn't have 32.
I know. But he could have. And he could have had 10. And then I wouldn't have an argument against the metric system. So he had 12, and I say, miles are the best.
Miles?
Feet, yards, whatever. The metric, the imperial system altogether is the best. So you're telling
me that he should have had...
Jesus was an American. That's what I'm trying to say, Joel.
The number of feet and miles was the number of disciples he should have had? He should have had multiple thousands? It's not
a direct... I'm not saying it's a direct one-to-one correlation. Because then it would be the metric system.
We're going to finish...
This is a weird argument.
We're going to finish this podcast. And then I'm going to tell you the argument you should have had to win. And you're going to feel real dumb about it?
Go ahead.
No.
You don't want to, like...
We just need to know that I actually won this. And then you'll know later. We'll do it next week once the argument's over.
We're not going to remember this.
It's officially marked down as a Joel victory and a Chris befuddlement. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CR Attire, where we live tweet Mondays, Tuesdays, the occasional Sunday.
I'm just the yuck yuck boy. Like, I will come up with jokes. That's all it was.
It's your turn.
God.
It's your turn.
If you want to send us an email, thoughts, comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show, send it to our email. That's classringattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. You can subscribe there, get a new episode every week. You could write a review. That would really help out. Or maybe give us a rating of 5 stars. That would really kind of help out the podcast. I'm not giving it to you. You're going to do something screwy with it. You don't get it.
I was going to say 5 disciples.
I was going to take away your toys.
Fine.
It's still your turn.
I was hearing something. I don't know. Jesus? He's coming to smite me. He was really into the metric system all this time. What was the line? If you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We'd love to hear from you. My podcast is playing through my headphones, so that's what it was.
This is falling apart. But it's proof that we do it live every week.
Yep.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. See what are the kind of things we're working on. Until next time, stay classy and huzzah.
It's a good thing we don't have any ads to read on this podcast. Huzzah.